This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky for February 2014. Well, we have a lovely sky after sunset during this month. That great constellation of Orion the Hunter is now a little bit to the west of south. The three stars of its belt point upwards towards Taurus the Bull, with those two lovely clusters, the Hyades, with the interloper Aldebaran, and the Pleiades. Up to the left of Orion, we have Gemini, the heavenly twins, and that this month contains a planet Jupiter. And going down leftwards from the three stars of the belt, we come to Sirius, the dog star, Alpha Canis Majoris. Sadly, for those of us in the north of England, the lower parts of Canis Major are not very obvious. But one thing you can try with a small telescope is just to scan downwards from Sirius, a little bit to the left, and you should come across a rather lovely little open cluster called M41. It's my favourite open cluster, actually, partly because not many people ever look at it, but there's a lovely red giant star in the centre amongst all the blue stars, the hot blue stars. It makes a lovely contrast. Moving over to the left, towards the south, and then the southeast, we have Canis Minor with the bright star Procyon. And then we come through Cancer with M44, the Beehive Cluster, well seen with binoculars. And then rising over in the east, we have Leo the Lion, its brightest star being Regulus. It's a bit like the lions in Trafalgar Square on their haunches. Following Leo, but rising later in the night, is that region of the sky called the Realm of the Galaxies, between Leo and Virgo, looking towards the giant Virgo cluster of galaxies. Higher up, in the northeast, we have Ursa Majoris. Above Taurus, we have the bright yellow star Capella in Auriga. And then we have, over towards the northwest, Cassiopeia and Perseus. If you follow from Cassiopeia towards Perseus, you're running along the plane of the Milky Way. And there's a lovely object there. It's called the double cluster in Perseus. A little hazy glow in binoculars. Well, what about the planets? Well, it's pretty obvious that the star in the planets this month is Jupiter. It's well placed in the evening sky, in the latter part of what is really an excellent apparition. It shines at magnitude minus 2.6. It actually was at opposition, i.e. due south around midnight, on Jan the 5th. So at the start of the month, it's high in the sky during the evening, being at 40 degrees elevation by 7 p.m. and rising to an elevation of over 60 degrees in the south around 10 p.m. It honestly doesn't get better than this. By month's end, Jupiter will be due south about 8:30 p.m. As I said earlier, it's lying in the constellation Gemini, moving westwards in retrograde motion towards the star Mebsuta, Epsilon Geminorum. With a small telescope, you can observe the four Gallian moons as they weave their way around it, and at times be able to pick out the great red spot, visible as an indentation in the south equatorial belt. Well, what about Saturn? It's a morning object, now visible in the pre-dawn sky, rising about 2 a.m. at the start of the month and about 12:30 at its end. It's lying in Libra, shining with a magnitude of plus 0.4, so it's not that bright. Its disk has a diameter of 17 arc seconds. The really good news is that the rings, with a diameter of 38 arc seconds, have now opened out to around 23 degrees from the line of sight, so presenting a magnificent view. With a small telescope, one should be able to spot Cassini's division that lies between the A and the B rings. If you have a telescope of perhaps 200 millimetres in aperture, the Encke gap towards the edge of ring A might be seen when the seeing is good. Sadly, for those of us in the northern hemisphere, Saturn is now lying in the more southerly part of the ecliptic. So even at opposition, its elevation does not get that high. And even worse, this situation will not improve for many years to come. Well, Mars is now moving on in its apparition. It lies in Virgo and rises about 11:30 at the start of the month, about 1 hour earlier by month's end. Its magnitude is increasing from plus 0.2 to minus 0.5 during the month, as the angular size increases from 9 to 11 arc seconds. So, given good seeing, it should be possible to see markings on its salmon-pink surface, which is 91% illuminated. These could be Syrtis Major, a V-shaped dark feature, or the polar caps, although it's actually the summer for the north polar cap, which is actually the one that's sort of facing towards us, so it may not be that prominent. Mars is moving down across Virgo, and at the start of the month is just 5 degrees to the upper left of Spica, Alpha Virginis. It ends the month 6 degrees to the left of Spica, as it then begins its retrograde motion back across the sky. Mercury. Mercury reached its greatest elongation east, that is, furthest in angular separation to the left of the Sun, of 18 degrees on Jan the 31st, when it lay about 10 degrees above the horizon, 45 minutes after sunset, lying near a very slender crescent moon. On the 1st of February, it will lie about 8 degrees below a slightly fuller crescent moon. The magnitude will then be minus 0.6. It will have an angular size of 7 arc seconds. And, given the low western horizon, should be visible for about 2 hours after sunset. Moving back towards the sun in angle, it will still remain visible for about an hour and a half after sunset by February the 7th. But by then its brightness will have dropped to magnitude plus 1. The angular size of the 20% illuminated disk will then have increased slightly to 8 arc seconds. But it then rapidly disappears from view, passing in front of the sun, that's called inferior conjunction, on the 15th of February. But by month's end, it will reappear again in the pre-dawn sky. It's actually then about 20 degrees to the west of the sun, but the elevation will be very low, and with a magnitude of plus 1, it will not be easy to spot. Well, finally, Venus. Well, Venus passed between the Earth and the Sun on the 11th of January, so in February will be seen low above the eastern horizon before dawn. By mid-February, the planet, shining at magnitude minus 4.6, will be visible 17 degrees above the southeastern horizon at sunrise. On Valentine's Day, it will show a 25% illuminated crescent disk, some 41 arc seconds across. As February draws to a close, Venus, remaining at magnitude minus 4.6, presents a fuller disk rising to 36%, that will be about 33 arc seconds across. Well, what about the highlights of the month? Well, as I've implied, February is a superb month to view Jupiter in the evening. A small telescope will see lots of details. Surely, if you haven't got one yet, you should get one. It's looking a little bit different than some of the last few years, as the North Equatorial Belt has become quite broad. The Great Red Spot has become more prominent recently and can be easily seen in a large feature in the South Equatorial Belt. If you look at the highlights for the month in the Night Sky page on the Jodrell Bank website, I've given a diagram based upon an image I took in December 2012 showing you the main features, but also I give a list of when the Great Red Spot is visible at suitable times during the evening. I've mentioned that on February the 1st and 2nd, Mercury will be close to a thin crescent moon. A nice thing to try and do when there's a very thin crescent is to look for Earthshine, the dark side of the moon illuminated by light reflected by clouds on Earth. On February the 10th, after sunset, Jupiter will be seen close to a waxing moon. It's about 7 degrees away. On February the 19th, before dawn, Mars will be close about 5.5 degrees above Spica in Virgo and 10 degrees to the upper right of a waning moon. Perhaps a nice thing to look for is on the 22nd of February, and plus or minus a few days, in fact, try and spot the second largest of the asteroids, its Pallas, or Minor Planet 2. This month, it's moving northwards through Hydra, closing in on the second magnitude star, Alphard, A-L-P-H-A-R-D. On the 22nd of the month, it reaches opposition, and so will be due south around midnight, shining at magnitude plus 7, sadly not visible with the unaided eye, but easily visible in a pair of binoculars. And that night, it'll be just 4 degrees away from Alphard. So if you find that, you can see Pallas in the same field of view of a pair of binoculars. Pallas is the second largest minor planet after Ceres in the main asteroid belt, and is about 550 kilometres across. On the 22nd, it'll be just over twice as far from the Sun as the Earth, 2.1 astronomical units. And perhaps I could point out, should the diameter of an object be greater than about 800 kilometres, then gravity will make it spherical, and nowadays it would then be classed as a dwarf planet. And that is, in fact, the case with Ceres. Finally, on February the 26th, before dawn, Venus is very close to a thin crescent moon. Looking southeast before dawn on that morning, you should spot Venus just half a degree above the disk of a slender waning crescent moon. And that should make a very good astrophotography target. Anyway, enjoy the months observing the sky.
Thanks for that, Ian. And for our listeners on the other side of the equator, here's John Field with the Southern Night Sky.
Kia ora, and welcome to the February Jodcast from Carter Observatory. Our evening sky is dominated by the planet Jupiter, along with the constellations of Orion, Canis Major, and Taurus in our northern sky. Appearing as a bright white star, Jupiter continues to move in front of the distant stars that form the zodiac constellation of Gemini the Twins. Gemini is one of the constellations through which the ecliptic passes. Over the year, the Sun moves in front of these constellations as the Earth completes its annual orbit around it. To the left of Jupiter and Gemini is an upside-down V of stars that forms the head of another zodiac constellation, Taurus the Bull. The brightest star in the V is Aldebaran, which has a distinct orange hue. This star is about 65 light-years away and is similar in mass to Sirius, but has evolved to become a giant star. As the star expanded, its surface area also increased, and its surface temperature dropped, giving the star an orangey-red hue. Sirius and our Sun will eventually do this, but not for a very long time. The fainter stars of the V belong to a more distant cluster called the Hyades. These are younger and brighter stars than Aldebaran. By extending the V down towards the northern horizon, you will find two stars marking the horn tips. The Pleiades mark the bull's back and can be found to the west of his head. Visible as a compact cluster of at least 6 stars, they make a fine sight in binoculars. In Greek mythology, Taurus is seen as the embodiment of the great god Zeus. Gemini and Cancer are two of the other zodiac constellations in our summer sky. The bright stars Castor and Pollux mark the heads of the twins, and they can be found in the north after sunset below Jupiter. Gemini lies on the eastern edge of the Milky Way, and this region contains a number of faint and distant stars. Within 1 degree of Castor, there are 5 faint galaxies that can be found using a large telescope. The December radiant of the Gemini meteor shower is also near to this star. Pollux, the brighter of the two stars, is about 35 light-years away from us. Nearby to Eta Geminorum, marking one of the feet of Gemini, is M35, an open star cluster. Under good conditions, it can be viewed with the unaided eye as a hazy star. Binoculars or a wide-field telescope are the best way to view this lovely cluster. Cancer the Crab is a fainter constellation of 5 stars, and near to the centre is a naked-eye cluster of stars called the Praesepe, or the Beehive. This large and bright star cluster appears as a nebula to the unaided eye, and binoculars reveal individual stars. Galileo viewed this cluster with his telescope in 1610, being the first human to see it as a star cluster. Orion the Hunter, our summer constellation, is due north after sunset. This bright grouping of stars dominates our summer evening sky, and to us southern hemisphere observers hangs upside down. Orion's brightest stars, Rigel, Betelgeuse, and Bellatrix, along with the 3 stars of his belt, form an easily seen pattern in our evening sky. Well, place viewing is the Orion Nebula, which can be found in the middle of Orion's sword. To the unaided eye, this nebula appears as a fuzzy star. If you have binoculars or a small telescope, they will reveal a bat-shaped cloud. A 100mm or greater telescope will reveal a number of stars in and around the nebula, including a tight group of four stars called the trapezium. Above the belt is Rigel, the brightest star in Orion, although it is listed as Beta, the second brightest star. This star is actually a triple star system about 860 light-years away, and the total luminosity of the group is estimated to be 130,000 times that of our Sun. To the east are Orion's two hunting companions, Canis Major, the large, and below, Canis Minor, the smaller dog. The brightest star in our night sky is Sirius, marks the collar of Canis Major. For us, the dog is lying on his back with his feet up in the air. Sirius is 8.7 light-years away, and about 26 times brighter than our Sun. Below Canis Major is Procyon, the eighth brightest star in the night sky. Just over a third of the way between Sirius and Procyon is a cluster of stars called M50, visible in binoculars. About halfway along the line from Procyon to Betelgeuse, binoculars will reveal a rectangular cluster of stars that is embedded in a faint nebula called the Rosette. Almost overhead in the early evening sky is the second brightest star, Canopus. From midnight, Mars, followed by Saturn, can be found rising in the east. Mars is in Virgo, and Saturn is in the constellation of Libra. Our autumn and winter months will see Mars and Saturn in our evening sky and better placed for viewing. Finally, Venus will reappear in our morning sky, rising just before the Sun. It will climb higher as the month progresses, and at month end, it will be joined by Mercury. We hope you have clear skies during the summer nights and take the opportunity to view the lights of our southern skies.